The torrid cyclone that ripped through the Southeast Asian lowlands has created a humanitarian crisis in Burma. In doing so, it's also revealed an ongoing political crisis as the regime there has restricted aid from the outside world to help its victimized citizenry. Hi, I'm Justin Guest, and welcome to the Government Department Hot Seat. With us today is Professor John Seidel, who will offer some background and insight to the ongoing political situation in Burma. Thanks for being here, Professor Seidel. What background can you offer about the political events that preceded this environmental disaster and that informed the government's response since then?
The Burmese government is essentially a military regime that has in different forms been in power since 1962. In the late 1980s, in particular in 1988, there was a series of protests and a very harsh crackdown when students and other people in the then capital, Rangoon, mobilized against the regime. Following that, in 1990, there was an election in which an opposition party, the National League for Democracy, led by Aung San Suu Kyi, essentially won 80% of the parliamentary seats, but the results of the election were essentially denied. And since that time, the regime has been entrenched and highly repressive of an organized opposition that is kept at bay through violence. So that's the essential backdrop.
So how has that history contextualized the international community's hesitation to more aggressively intervene in this situation to help?
Well, there's a complicated, longer history that might help to explain the isolationism of the Burmese military. It's not your standard garden variety military dictatorship. Most military dictatorships with which we might be familiar are right-wing dictatorships. But the history of this one is vaguely socialist, one which was formed in the early 1960s and evolved over time, in part to isolate the regime from the Cold War, from perceived enemies of U.S. imperialism, of the former colonial power, the UK, and its allies in and around Burma. And thus there's a sort of history of Cold War intervention in Burma dating back to the late 1940s, early 1950s, which has made this particular regime a peculiar one that has no close ties to any of the major Western powers, save, curiously enough, Japan. One thing that's often forgotten is that Japan has been a major donor to Burma and has been heavily involved in Burma from the 1980s forwards.
As the cyclone hit within a matter of weeks of the Chinese earthquake disaster, how has the sequence of events affected the Chinese image from a human rights perspective globally?
Well, the initial attention to Burma in the press and the attention focused on the possibility of China's intervention, China's application of pressure, has then been overshadowed by events in China, but also overshadowed by various kinds of efforts by the neighboring states of ASEAN, the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, and the Burmese regime's own public pronouncements to, in some ways, wipe the story from the front pages and from the TV news, so that the continuing suffering of people in Burma and the efforts of the regime to actually evict forcibly tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people from sites of refuge in monasteries and schools and so forth, all that has now been removed from public view for the most part.
Well, Burmese authorities have since released about 15 activists from the opposition party that you mentioned earlier. Is this going to continue as long as the international eye remains fixed on the government's actions?
The Burmese military regime seems relatively impervious, and very impervious compared to many other countries, with regard to foreign pressures, insofar as its economy it runs on a very low gear and there's not a heavy dependence on foreign investment, foreign assistance, and other involvement from countries that are critical and are closely scrutinizing human rights problems in Burma. So I would be very pessimistic as to the possibilities for a further evolution in the direction of political liberalization. They've just passed, by referendum, a bogus constitution that really constitutes a major obstacle towards any kind of democratization or meaningful political change in Burma.
So in light of these very difficult circumstances, what do you suggest the international community do?
Well, there have been sanctions in place, especially on the part of the United States. But insofar as these sanctions have huge loopholes, insofar as these sanctions do not fully involve the neighboring countries, not just China, but now India and neighboring Thailand, are countries which are all in various ways aiding and abetting the military regime in Burma. And insofar as pressure is not applied on those countries to withdraw their support, it's hard to see that such sanctions will really prove meaningful. What's difficult in this case is that in contrast to, say, a military regime in an industrialized or industrializing country, one that relies on a veneer of parliamentary democracy or pseudo-democracy, and so forth, this is a much more isolated, a much more rural country with a much smaller urban middle class, urban working class, a business class, and the cracks within the regime, which itself controls the economy in tandem with some foreign investment, means that it's very hard to sort of find cracks within the regime that would allow for a kind of opening. If we look at various transitions to democracy in different parts of the world, you find that there are institutional fissures within a regime that are then useful for some kind of opening to civilian politics, parliamentary politics, and so forth. You have a military regime with the military as an institution ruling in a junta that seems pretty solid. Any kind of rumors or hopes with regard to factionalism within the military seems to have proven, if not false, then a rather faint basis for hope.
So what support exactly have the countries you've mentioned give to the Burmese regime?
Well, certainly through military assistance, economic assistance, trade, and diplomatic support, in all those ways.
And they're not willing to stop that?
No. I mean, certainly for China and India, there are major strategic concerns at stake. For China, having a kind of window on the Indian Ocean is very important, and then India is keen to counter China's move since the late 1980s to strengthen its ties to Burma and to develop intelligence and military facilities through links to the Burmese regime. In the case of Thailand, it's perhaps much more a matter of economics, with major investments in logging and minerals and so forth in Burma. So there are different considerations here which won't go away. If in Thailand, for example, democratic politics were such that popular sentiment about the regime in Burma would make a difference, that would be another story. But it's not the kind of issue that animates ordinary Thai voters. So it's on the back burner as far as Thai politics is concerned.
A very dark and bleak and Kafkaesque illustration of the Burmese regime.
Yeah, sadly, there's little reason to be very hopeful. I mean, again, if you look throughout Southeast Asia, this is part of the poor mainland part of Southeast Asia that has experimented with socialism. And thus, it's in a very different category from the sort of thriving, industrialized countries that have been full-blown capitalist economies for decades at a time. The isolationism of Burma and, you know, one might also say, well, Laos and Cambodia and Vietnam, quicker to join the world economy, they still have a ways to go, and not just in terms of economic development, but in terms of a kind of political context in which one could really hope for meaningful challenge to strongly entrenched authoritarian regimes.
All right, Professor John Seidel, you are off the hot seat. I wish you could be the bearer of better news, but for what it's worth, we appreciate having you here. For more from Professor Seidel, be sure to check out his most recent books, the newest of which is called The Islamist Threat in Southeast Asia, You can find that on Amazon.com and select bookshops. And, of course, also an earlier book called Riots, Pogroms, and Jihad, which also can be found at select bookshops and Amazon.com. Thanks for being with us. We will see you in the next academic year on the Hot Seat.